Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. This episode is brought to you by One Cause, creator of powerful peer-to-peer and online fundraising solutions, helping over 6,000 nonprofits make giving more social, mobile, and fun. Reinvent your supporter experience to drive deeper engagement, inspire giving, and motivate fundraising in a virtual world. To learn more about One Cause, visit them at www.onecause.com. Hi, podcast listeners. Thank you for joining us today. I am delighted that this is number 5 in this special series with Toronto AFP. We have been collaborating with AFP for the last several weeks, inviting their members to come on the podcast and have conversations about how COVID-19 is affecting their organizations. We're in each one of these episodes, we've asked a co-host from the Toronto AFP chapter to work with me to kind of facilitate the conversation. Andrea, you've agreed to do that for us. Would you mind introducing yourself and then introduce the rest of the group?
Thanks, Jason. And thank you for this great opportunity today to have this conversation with my colleagues. My name is Andrea Simpson, and I am the Capital Campaign Director for a charity called the High Park Nature Center here in Toronto. Today, I am joined by three of my colleagues in and around the Toronto area. So I'd love for you guys to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about the organization that you're working with right now. And we'll start off with my wonderful colleague, Will Scott. Go ahead, Will.
Thanks, Andrea. And thanks, Jason. And thanks for having me to the AFP Toronto chapter. I work at Evergreen, which is an environmental charity with a big mission, which is to make cities better. We think about how do we make cities more livable, green, and prosperous. Most people know us from our site, which gets about 500,000 visitors a year, which is the Evergreen Brickworks. But we also run national programs all across Canada focusing on making cities more sustainable.
Thanks, Will. And Marcia Russell, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hi, and happy, where are we, Wednesday? The days are blurring together a little bit for us. But thank you so much for having me on this podcast. And I'm here from the Bruce Trail Conservancy. I am the Vice President of Fund Development with them. Most of you, I'm hoping you've heard of the Bruce Trail. We are one of Ontario's most active land trusts, and we stored over 16,000 acres of land along the Niagara Escarpment. And we're caretakers of the Bruce Trail. So many people have either experienced the Bruce Trail or intend to use it. It's 900 kilometers long from Niagara to Tobermory, and it really is a wonderful asset for the people of Ontario to explore and connect with nature. And we've been in existence for over 50 years in an effort to build a conservation corridor to house the Bruce Trail and to have the natural wonders of the Niagara Escarpment preserved. So thanks so much.
Thanks, Marcia. And now we'll hear from Kyria Nibb-McLuhan. Kyria, go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kyria. I work with the Nature Conservancy of Canada. I'm the Senior Director of Campaign and Development Operations, and Nature Conservancy of Canada is a bit of a mouthful, so we say NCC. We secure ecologically sensitive lands across Canada and care for those lands for the benefit of Canadians, and to date, we've helped to secure over 14 million hectares across Canada.
Wonderful. So thank you all for being a part of this today. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you. And yes, thank you again, Jason, for this opportunity. And thanks to the AFP Greater Chapter of Toronto for this collaboration in this space to have these great conversations. I am currently the Capital Campaign Director for the High Park Nature Center here in Toronto. The High Park Nature Center was established in 1999, and our mission is really to promote awareness and respect for nature through year-round, hands-on outdoor nature education and park stewardship activities. And the park in which we operate, High Park, is a 399-acre urban park that hosts roughly 1.5 million now probably closer to 2 million visitors annually. And it's listed as one of Canada's top three municipal parks. And we're obviously very proud about that. So between the four of us, we really cover both a local and national scope through our work, I think. But we all know when we turn to talking about the environment, we're really speaking from a global perspective and a shared sense of both duty of care and joy for the great outdoors. So I thank you all for joining this very important conversation today. And we all on this conversation have ties to AFP. And I'd like to just make mention of a couple of the resources that AFP has available to everyone before we dive into our discussion. So like our group today, fellow AFP members can stay in touch and share resources over AFP Connect. And that is through the AFP Global platform, where members can discuss their personal and professional challenges, key learnings, including forums on mental health and wellness, and how to pivot your business operations during this time of the global pandemic. AFP Toronto also has a COVID-19 resource guide for members, and you can find that on the website. And our local chapter, AFP Greater Toronto, members should look out for more local resources and upcoming virtual events. And again, those will be sent directly to members and also accessible on the website. Okay, let's jump right into our discussion today. I know we're all still connecting with our staff and our executive and likely peers in the fundraising industry. And one of the sort of the big questions right now and something that's weighing on senior management and fundraisers' minds is how are we staying connected with our team and with our donors? So that's sort of a split question. Maybe, Will, I'll ask you to go ahead and answer first. At Evergreen, how are you staying connected with your team?
So we had launched a pilot in January, which is really fortuitous, of working. It was through in-kind support from Microsoft, of launching Microsoft Teams as a platform. And so we'd started it as a kind of way to do channeled communications in our team, to break down hierarchy, and to just encourage robust conversation. It also has a video component to it. And so when this hit, we actually were pretty well prepared in the sense that we had a channel, we had a way to talk to each other that wasn't just email. We had video conversations or capability already set up, and that was great. I think the donor one was a little bit more challenging, just because you know, we were reaching out to donors to get a sense of just how they're doing personally. It was a big shock to everyone, and so I think the initial conversations were just about how are people doing socially, how are their families, is everyone healthy, And what do they want to see for Evergreen to do in response to this current situation? So that was the initial kind of conversations with donors. And out of that came a number of great ideas that we're currently following up on. So we pivoted some programs as a result of those conversations.
That's great. And I think the how question is the most asked question, really, when it comes to both staff and donors. Marcia, what about you guys? How are you guys approaching sort of the staffing piece as well as the donor piece for the Bruce Trail?
So one of the biggest immediate impacts that is happening with the Bruce Trail Conservancy is the physical closing of the Bruce Trail, which is something that we never actually imagined we would have to do. So typically in the spring, this is our golden hour with donors and members and volunteers. We spend every weekend out on the trail together as a community. We have lots of different donor events where we acquire a piece of property, and then we take our donors out on tours all spring and summer and fall, basically. So managing the closure of the Bruce Trail has been a really difficult decision to make. When public health announced it was the right thing to do, we quickly put that plan into action. But it really forced us to take a look at how we stay connected with our community. And we did a bit of a low-tech approach, and we started a telephone campaign with all of our donors across sectors, major donors, annual donors, monthly givers. And there were calls just to check in. Just like Will's group was doing, really, really nice to make that connection, to have those conversations, to fill our donors in that the Bruce Trail Conservancy staff were well and what we're doing. And those conversations have continued. We're actually in a campaign right now to secure two acquisitions on the Niagara Escarpment. And we had to make the decision, is this the time to go ahead with a fundraising campaign or do we pause? And we took a deep breath and we went ahead and launched the campaign. And so now the calls have morphed into thank you calls for supporting the campaign. And it's just really, it's been a wonderful experience for our staff to have those conversations, to feel the vibration of generosity that's coming off of the campaign, and really to genuinely say thank you. Some of our past donor events, you've got a big group and you're experiencing nature together, but the one-on-one conversations are short. So these phone calls have been really terrific. And as soon as we say we're calling to say thank you and not to ask for a gift, the conversations go on a bit longer, which is nice. So engaging with our donors that way has been important. And then we've also pivoted to do a lot more online content. We have our ecologist doing webinars talking about what's happening on the Bruce Trail right now with the properties that we own and the nature reserves that we maintain. Nature doesn't stop. So it's really good to stay connected with our donor base that way as well. So a lot of hands on deck, and it's been galvanizing as a staff project as well to have everyone from the CEO to our ecologists to admin staff all making these calls together, because we have the concept that everyone's a fundraiser, and this really put it into practice.
Thanks, Marcia. That's really insightful. And I love that comment about nature doesn't stop. I think we can all take that into our daily practice for sure. And Kiri, what about you? What about NCC?
Well, we have a number of similarities to what Will and Marcia just discussed. In terms of staying in touch with our team, we, like Will and Evergreen, were on the precipice of launching Microsoft Teams anyways. And that was just fast-tracked by our IT team when suddenly we were all working from home. So that's been, Microsoft Teams has been a fantastic tool for us in terms of staying in touch with our team. And, you know, we have the added complexity of being across Canada organization. So we have offices in every province. In some provinces, we have multiple offices. We're about 350 people across the country. So, we need a good way to stay in touch. But at the same time, we did have some experience in needing to work closely with folks who aren't necessarily in the same office as us. We had that experience already. And in terms of our donors and staying connected and communicating with them, like Marsha, because we're in the conservation sector, we had to consider what we would do about property access and our volunteer season. You know, April is usually when we launch our volunteer season and have many events in every province and supporters and donors coming out to do work alongside our staff on our properties. And then we also have many properties that have trails and different types of public access. So we postponed our volunteer season and have closed all of our properties to the public for the time being. And we will reopen both the properties and the volunteer season at some point, but you know we have to consider what the recommendations are locally in each province, and I'm sure it will be a phased approach to reopening when we decide to do that. So that's been tough, but we do have really robust social media and email platforms that we already used to stay in touch with many donors and followers across Canada. So we've certainly kept on with that and ramped it up in many respects. We also started a stewardship and stewardship outreach campaign and a thank you call campaign, which I heard Marsha mention as well. We actually reached out to our staff across the country to ask who might be interested in signing up to phone donors and just say thanks right now and touch base and see how they're doing. And we've had about 40 staff across the country sign up, which is really great. It's more than we expected. And a lot of them are not fundraisers and not people who would regularly be doing communications or talking to donors, which is even more fantastic. Even our CFO signed up to make calls to donors. I think there's a curiosity among the staff to see what it's like to talk to donors from those who don't usually get to have those conversations. So that's going to be really exciting. And we're just actually launching that next week. So remains to be seen how that goes. And around our major donor relationships, that's an area I work in closely. And certainly we have many staff across the country and many donors who we want to check in on and make sure they're doing okay, and also be communicating about whatever changes NCC is going through or whatever projects that they may have been invested in or keen about, and communicating what's happening with those particular projects. So around our major donor work, we've come up with sort of a set of guidelines to help all of us as major gifts fundraisers at NCC understand how to approach our work during this time. And those guidelines are, first and foremost, that the health and safety of both our staff and our donors and our communities is obviously number one. So we are, you know, our offices are closed, we're social distancing, we're not doing in-person meetings or in-person events, which, of course, is very different for major gifts fundraisers. A second guideline to staff is that we are still fundraising. But as always, especially when building personal relationships, you know, you have to consider the donor's personal situation at the moment. And so that may change. If you were ready to make an ask, that may change whether you are still making an ask of that person, whatever the project might be that you've been speaking with a donor or prospect about. You have to consider whether that project is moving forward or not. And all of those, intuitive relationship building pieces that we typically exercise as fundraisers are still in play, if not more so now than ever. Another of our guiding principles is that this is an opportune time for stewardship. So because things maybe have been shut down or slowed down, if fundraising is not possible with some of your relationships, then stewardship is the way to go right now. Keep people up to date, reach out, see how they're doing. Just as we're always trying to do, you know, that our donors love what we do and want to keep in touch. And so we should be doing that. And then our final guiding principle, if you will, is, of course, we have many leadership volunteers in our board and our campaign leaders across the country who are connecting with companies and individuals and foundations on our behalf. So we want to make sure that our board and our campaign volunteers understand the aforementioned guidelines and that we are managing and working with our volunteers across the country in accordance with all of those guidelines that we've set out. So I will stop there. That's a lot.
No, that's really good, actually. And I think, you know, we've all sort of, whether or not we've written them down and shared them internally and with our board and volunteers, guidelines are certainly what we're all thinking about right now. And I think in those three key things that you mentioned, you know, safety, you know, the fact that you're still fundraising is important. And you know, understanding the personal situations of some of your donors and prospects is also very important. And prioritizing, I suppose, is tied in with that. And then having that flow of communication with your board and your volunteers and back to your staff has never been more important than it is right now. For the Nature Center, I'll say, you know, we're using Microsoft Teams as well. It's fantastic. We've been using it for quite some time. So again, we've sort of just ramped up our activity. The physical closing of High Park, you know, as the rest of you have experience with that sort of physical piece of the work we do in the outdoors, has been challenging. The park has been closed now since April 30th, and that's due in part to the cherry blossom season right now. The park can see upwards of 200,000 people just during peak bloom time. And so in a space where we are socially and physically distancing, that's just not possible. So the city made the call to close the park. Rest assured, Torontonians, the park will reopen in a short time and we'll be able to go back into that beautiful space while still staying apart. Anything else that anyone wanted to add just on how senior management and folks are thinking about just how to relate to your team and how to reach out to your donors?
I had a question. We're hosting our first donor event on Monday, and I'm a little, we're trying to figure out how to do it and how to do it best. It was it going to be a dinner to thank donors who have invested in our Toronto Ravine Initiative? The mayor was going to be in attendance just to thank them and so we've moved it to Zoom, but we have no idea. I think we're kind of figuring this out as we go along. And I'm just wondering whether anyone has had any experience or thoughts about how to move beyond the one-on-one connection with a donor into more group experiences, or if anyone has any thoughts there.
Yeah, it's Curia. NCC is investigating and trying to figure out the same thing. Well, investigating virtual event space, right? I think a lot of organizations are trying to do this right now. We have a very robust in-person events program that runs every fall. And so we're lucky that we do have a little bit of lead time to figure this out. But even if things are opened up and we are allowed to have group gatherings in the fall again, I don't think that people will want to sit in a room of 200 other people right beside other guests breathing on each other. I think people's mindsets are just different now. So I think a lot of organizations are trying to figure that out. We've, to your question at hand, we have sort of tested two very small pilot online events. One was actually a phone event, and it was hosted by NCC's Ontario region. It was called All About Owls, and it was an effort to see if especially followers and donors with kids might be interested in calling in and learning some cool things about owls. And our staff even did some owl calls on the phone call, and our Alberta region did an online screening of a film and then had a Q&A with staff members and experts following the film. And that was done through the live events function on Microsoft Teams. So yeah, you're not the only one who's wondering how to go about these things right now. And I think especially in your situation where you were aiming to celebrate something and make people feel really connected to each other and good, it's tough to do that online.
Yeah. But good for you for trying. I think your donors and the community that rallied around the campaign are going to be happy if they take the time to participate in the Zoom meeting or event. That's your first win. They've already come to the table, which is great. And the idea of using that platform to the best of its ability, you know, keeping the program short, using maybe if there's time to do some video footage of the project, what happened in the ravines, where you were 2 years ago, where you are now because of their support, things like that. Might just be enough to keep people interested and engaged. I don't know if the mayor would be able to give a short address, taped so that you can display it, have a question and answer period. But it's never going to be the same as, having people in the room where you can move around and see people. But I think if you use the time, less time, but you use it in a multidimensional way, you probably have a good chance of having a good event. So
thank you.
Posted.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I would just add to that as well. What does the follow-up piece look like from that event? Like Marcia said, I think it's a win, even if you just, you look on your platform and you have X number of people engaged. I think that's a win, right? People wholeheartedly understand that your community and the sense of getting together has changed drastically. So people showing up online is really an effort of people showing up right now. I would also say keep us posted on how that goes and what the follow-up looks like from that. Let's move on to talk about remote delivery. And how has remote delivery sort of changed the model in what you're doing at your organization? Do you still feel as though you're serving your community? And what does that look like? Marcia, we can start with you because you did mention that you're trying to do some online content. So can you elaborate on that for us?
Sure. So typically, as I was mentioning, and it sounds like everyone around this table has a physical space that they usually would take their community out to experience their mission. So we needed to pivot and change. So we started a few webcasts. And in our world, the staff ecologists are rock stars. People are always interested to hear about what this sedge is or what this, particular plant is, et cetera. So our team is very knowledgeable and engaging. And so we thought, okay, people enjoy those types of interactions. Let's build a webcast about issues that are happening right now on the trail. So invasive species is an issue that the Bruce Trail Conservancy volunteers are incredibly attuned to and dedicated in terms of their diligence to get out and pull garlic mustard to address buckthorn. And so what we did is we had the webcast and it was a much broader scope. So it was about biodiversity in your backyard. So if you decide to become a volunteer with us in the future, this is what garlic mustard is. This is why it's a concern. But right now it's happening in your backyard more likely than not, and we have a window of time to address it. So there was an education component and there was a call to action. So even though we're not, out on the Bruce Trail pulling garlic mustard, we can do it in our backyards. And it is important that, our effort to maintain a healthy biodiversity, is ongoing. So people are really responsive. We set the first attendance level at 100 people and it was oversubscribed. And the next one we did, we upped the participation to 500 and it was oversubscribed again. So something that I'm finding in terms of our outreach is that people are available. there was a time where if you tried to call a major donor on the phone, most likely it would go to voicemail, or you would have to book a meeting. But right now, people are more accessible and they're interested and they want to know what's happening with the charities that they care about and the investments that they've made. So, you know, when we were talking about stewardship before, stewardship of our donors is easier than it's ever been, and it's more important than it's ever been. So solicitation is only a small part of what we do as fundraisers, and stewardship is really a joy when you get to talk about what their gifts have enabled your organization to do on behalf of a challenging situation in our environment. So the webcasts have been really great, and they're not complicated to put together. I don't have that skill set, but someone on our team does, and the knowledge base is there. And I'm sure everyone on this call and people listening to this web or podcast would have people on their team that could put together a really interesting, compelling program and just deliver it in a different way.
That sounds really good, Marcia. Kiria, what about the NCC?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I touched on a little bit just in my answer to Will, but certainly I would say the piece of our, I guess, mission that's hardest to deliver on right now is that stewardship, land stewardship, and also the engagement programs we run, like our conservation volunteers program that I mentioned earlier. And similar to Marcia, we have folks on our team trying to think about, well, how can we give our volunteers and donors who are interested in coming out to our properties typically every year, how can we give them a similar experience or some of the information that they would have been looking for? How can we give that to them remotely? And some of the pieces we've talked about so far are, there's a really great app that already exists called iNaturalist. Mm-hmm. And I know a number of organizations are trying to understand right now how they can leverage that. There's the concept of citizen science and bioblitzes, which is basically turning anybody into a scientist that can go out and identify species in their backyard. And, you can upload that to an app. And if we're all doing it in a city or a province or a country, it's adding all of this great scientific observations and information into one place. And that's the concept of citizen science. So how can we do that from our homes with apps on our phones rather than being out on an NCC property volunteering alongside our scientists? We also on Earth Day launched Take Five with Nature, which is a social media campaign that NCC is running right now, where we're encouraging Canadians to do just that, take 5 minutes with nature, even though it might be looking out your window at the blossoms that are developing or sitting in your backyard on a sunny or maybe even a cloudy day and capturing that moment and sharing it on social media and just making sure we're still taking the time with nature that we know benefits our health and well-being. I think another complexity for NCC has been our land stewardship work. So that's our staff who go out to NCC properties and do activities on those properties that benefit the health and well-being of those particular properties and the species on them. So that's another piece we've had to look at how we're doing that during this time when, we can't be having groups of people out together on properties.
Right. And hopefully, that Take Five initiative is something that we can carry forward to, after the global health crisis has come and gone, hopefully. Mm-hmm. That's something that you guys can certainly take into your next piece of work as well. Will, what about you? What about Evergreen?
So some of our programs are not affected too much. Some of our national programs are still going on, but I'll talk about maybe three programs that were particularly tied to our Evergreen Brickworks site. And what we're doing in response to them. The first is many of us know us for our farmers market, which really is we see as an intervention to build local foodways to ensure that the food that people have access to is healthy, is building a kind of local ecosystem of producers, is connected kind of farm to table. And, you know, our site was closed down when this hit, and obviously our market was as well. But we kind of very quickly pivoted and developed an opportunity called Farm in a Box, where we would box up some of the produce for our farmers, ensure that they retained some income, and then sold this to prepackaged boxes where people could kind of come and pick it up in a remote way. So it's kind of curbside delivery a program. And then in a conversation with one of our major donors, she suggested that we should be offering this healthy food to vulnerable communities. And so in addition to selling the boxes, we now are providing 50 families with stable, healthy food sources for the next 12 weeks. And so that's an example of how do you, that's a new program of ours, is a kind of connecting vulnerable communities with sustainable, healthy food. So that's a new opportunity for us, not just a kind of transition of what we were doing to a new format. The second program that we've pivoted is some of our children's programming. We host thousands and thousands of school children to our site during a kind of a regular March and April. And these children are connecting with nature. They're doing connecting with the natural world and learning curriculum through outdoor experiences and play. And so we're figuring out how to take some of that online. I don't think we fully figured it out. And how do we do a hybrid experience? So in addition to a farm in a box, we created a seed in a box program where families could pick this up, and there's a whole curriculum that went along with it. And then we've got virtual programming. One of our expert gardeners talks about indigenous knowledge and on a kind of weekly basis, and then another of our children's programmers does a weekly webcast as well, aimed at children, at fulfilling some of our mission in that regard. And then a really emergent program, Evergreen, has also been thinking about public art as part of our mission of creating flourishing cities. And we are just in the process of creating programming that is responsive to COVID. So how do we flow money to artists in this difficult time? And how do we produce site-specific artworks that respond to this dramatic cultural and environmental shift that we are all experiencing right now? And that program is really emergent. So I can't say more than that, really, other than that's an area of work that we're trying to do. And I think in all three, it's trying to be creative with delivering not just delivering on our broader mandate, not just trying to pivot, take programs and put them virtually. It's trying to deliver on our mandate to create local foodways, children's programming, and public art. In new ways is, I guess, the theme of all of them.
That's great. And I like the idea, Will, the farm in a box idea, and you were able to take that and expand that and implement it into a new opportunity. And the thought sort of was a catalyst from one of your donors. That's a fantastic story. That's come out of what's happening right now in the world. So I would say that the Nature Center is sort of sounds similar to all of your organizations. We've taken our in-session nature clubs, and our nature educators have just done an incredible job Marsha, I think you said rock stars is a term we should be using more often right now. Just truly rock stars in taking that content and moving it online and taking what would have been a 2-hour biweekly nature club, which primarily was, outdoor education in the park. And they've moved that to a 1-hour Zoom meeting for participants. And I mean, we're talking about some of these kids are as young as, 4 and 5 years old in the chipmunk class. And they're still having circle sharing time. They're still getting out their nature books and drawing pictures of birds. They're still getting a nature lesson and talking about the seasons. And, there's a different focus for each week. And we're just encouraging that shared experience of the outdoors, even while we are all indoors. We're also getting our adult programs coming back online soon. We've done a virtual nature cafe last week. We're just encouraging people to connect online. We did a dawn chorus last week, which was fabulous. And a nature walk through the park had 75 participants online. So it just goes to show you again, people are striving to still have a sense of community, whether or not that community is sort of in person or online. Let's talk about the opportunity that exists for environment organizations right now. Again, we're all sort of, wanting to connect with nature, to be in nature. Some of that is challenging as parks and outdoor spaces are closed. But, where does that opportunity exist for organizations like ours at this time? Marsha, maybe we'll start with you.
Sure. I think when all of this happened so quickly and not a lot of people had contingency plans for a pandemic, I'm not sure if anyone on this call had that plan in place, but we checked our shelves and we didn't have an emergency plan for it. So there was a lot of time immediately addressing some of the critical things that were in front of us. But now as time is moving on and we're starting to kind of embrace our new normal, as we're looking around the room, we're looking to our partners who maybe we'd only consider in one area. Now we're bringing them on stream in a bunch of different programming areas, for example. So Bird Studies Canada got involved with us with one of the podcasts, and we had a really great conversation about migratory birds. And that's something that you can experience this season from home and next season on the trail, and weaving that into the bigger context of conservation corridors only work if they're connected. And even if, this particular species of bird only spends a little bit of time on our conservation corridor, if it wasn't there, their migration wouldn't be able to happen. So weaving things into the bigger context of the environment and the work that we're all doing has been really interesting. So, Will, what you were saying about expanding your reach to people in need, I think this is a real opportunity for us all to be open to some of the possibilities that are out there, and partnerships in a different way are something that we're looking at, up and down the ladder. So can we help some of the smaller land trusts with some of the work they're doing? Can some of the larger land trusts support us? So it's time for creativity now that we've all adjusted to what's happening right now, and seeing what the opportunities are is pretty exciting.
That's great. Kiria, what about you?
Well, when you asked that question, I sort of had a split thought. One is there's opportunity, I think, for our missions in general, all of us being in the environment sector. I think people being cooped up indoors and not being able to access some of their green spaces that they regularly do, they're realizing how important those places are to them. And so I think there's a bigger opportunity there long term. And as we start to emerge from the current situation and things start to open back up, I think there's certainly an opportunity there to capitalize on people's understanding of how important those places are to us. But also the second part of my mind went to the fundraising piece of things. And I think there is an opportunity there as well. This is a part, Jason, you might have to cut this part out because I'm losing my train of thought right now. but I'll leave it at that because I lost my train of thought on the second part. And maybe if I remember it later, Andrea, I'll jump back in and let you know what that second thought was.
We'll completely. So catch your breath and think about it. It might've been because Andrea and I were texting down at the bottom. What do you think it was? We can totally edit this out. What do you think it was? Sit on it for a minute. You were doing well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just raise your hand if it comes back to you and I'll go back to you.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. But we will totally edit all this out. And let's bring this to, you probably can go for about another 10 minutes at the most.
Okay.
You guys have done this is a remarkable one. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll wrap up with Will and finish off this question with Will. And then I'll just ask you guys if you're hearing of any best practices in the industry that we should be sharing.
Okay.
So Will, what about you in terms of Evergreen? Anything you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece for our blog that was about the relationship between COVID and climate change. And I think that we are seeing a worldwide shift, rapid shift in response to this virus. And I think in the first stage of response, it really did need to focus upon health and vulnerable communities. But as this goes on, I think that we can start to make connections much more explicit to the shifts that we are going to have to make for climate change. A few things that I think are really relevant to both are, one is that the focus upon resilient communities is not just in the face of this virus. We know that with climate change, we are going to experience heat events, floods, wind, all of these things that will make the need for resilient communities incredibly important, not just in this crisis, but beyond. I think the second thing that we're realizing is that we need to have a future orientation and a long-term view. I think environmentalists have been pushing this for a long time, and I think futurists are among the only people who predicted a pandemic, but we cannot be oriented to the next quarter. We really do need to take the long view as we think about the shifts that we need to make. And then the third, I think, is that this is a tragedy of epic proportion, but it will lead to innovation. And I think that innovation is really a source that can really make our missions relevant and we can make the environment a much more central part of our discourse going forward and make action on those things that we really have to make action on, whether it's giving people greater access to nature, our planet, the healthy water, you know, all of those other things. I think that we can find this in this pandemic a source of innovation that will hopefully bring us together to solve some of those other challenges that we face.
Right. I agree with you, Will. And I think the narrative between environment and mental health will just become stronger through the other side of this. And I think that's also very important to be mindful of. It's getting close to wrapping up our time here, sadly. I think this has been a great conversation between us. Maybe let's wrap up with a question about best practices in the industry. Will, I did read your piece last week and it was great. Is there anything else that we've been reading or sharing amongst industry colleagues that we'd like to make mention of right here? And maybe Will, we'll start with you.
I've been learning so much from other people. I mean, I think we're all just reading as much as we possibly can. I think that one of the things that I'm taking away from this conversation, but it aligns with all the other conversations I've had with my fundraising colleagues in AFP, is just the need to be human-centered in this and use your intuition when working with donors. We don't know what is going on in their worlds, and stewardship is is, of course, always important and never more important than now in this time of turmoil. So I think rather than specific references, I think that it's that general theme of the importance of stewardship and engaging on a human level with donors and holding our community close right now, I think, is true of us personally, but also professionally.
That's very well said. And Marcia, what about you?
You know, it's so interesting thinking, Will, about some of the high points that you mentioned about climate change and how it's connected to what we're experiencing right now. And something that we're working on, you know, having that donor-centric human focus, is treating our donors like their friends. And if there's an article that you happen to come across that is about resilience or is about some type of really promising innovation, I've been sharing articles left, right, and center with donors that I know might be interested in them, because we've got the time to let our minds be creative and to dig in. And we really are looking for that beacon of light and hope. So that's where we are in terms of, like, when we're thinking about reaching out. It's like, if you have a donor who might be interested in this particular article, just go ahead and send it and stay connected and stay top of mind as much as you can, because they're thinking about you and they're thinking about the work that the organization's doing. So it's a nice way to stay connected. And another thing that we're working on as a team is that kind of service excellence. Really, you know, we're listening to our donors. We are making sure that if there's something that we can do to be above and beyond in terms of servicing donors, we really want to try to do that right now, because we're all incredibly busy, but the little things matter so much. Remembering something that they said, circling back, answering questions. It's a time to kind of challenge and stretch yourself as a fundraiser to do the best you can with staying connected and relevant to our donors. So it's something that we're working on. And another last point, just as a professional group, it's really important to remember our own well-being and mental health, and the fact that we will all see the other side of this, and our work is really relevant and important. So just reminding ourselves to take care of ourselves as well.
Yeah, that's very true, Marcia. Very true. And that connectivity with donors, you know, when it's not just an ask, when it truly is something to be shared at that level, is a wonderful way to just stay connected. Kiria, what about you?
I mean, everyone's said it so well. I would just echo what Will and Marcia already said. Be sensitive. Be communicating. You know, I think best to your original question, Andrea, best practices are still emerging. There are no best practices right now for this kind of situation, I don't think.
That's true. That's very true. I find myself looking towards the Toronto Foundation for sort of insight and guidance at this time. And if anybody's listening to this podcast or my colleagues here on the line, want to tune in, Sharon Avery is doing she's hosting a weekly webinar on Thursday mornings as part of the Better Toronto Coalition from the foundation. And it's really, you know, the Toronto Foundation's response to this global health crisis we're all living through. And she's featuring local charities to share their experiences in the trenches right now. And encouraging them to verbalize their call to action. And it's been quite a powerful platform. I think they're into maybe week four, week five now. It's creating a space for charities. A lot of these are frontline charities. And a space for funders and community advocates to really work together and produce results. So I would encourage anyone to be tuning into the Toronto Foundation. Well, I think this wraps up our time. This has been a
Andrea, great... before we let everybody wrap up, I'm just one of your previous hosts in this series asked everybody to sort of wrap up with a key word that sort of describes their organization or their individual experiences in the midst of all this sort of upheaval and change and evolution. And I was just curious if you could just sort of work your way through the list real quick and let everybody come up with that. What's that key word that sort of sums it all up for them? And then Andrea, if you'll tell us a little bit more about the AFP chapter before we let everyone go, that would be really great too.
Sure. No problem. So I would say, you know, it's been great sharing our experience today on the podcast. You know, one of the things that was said is nature doesn't stop. And I think from the High Park Nature Center, we're hopeful. So my key word today would be hopeful. There is, we are going to come out of this. There is another side to this global health crisis, and let's just stay hopeful. Marcia, what about you?
This is such a great question. So I love hopeful, and I think I'm going to go with gratitude, which is kind of a complicated concept right now, but we, as a staff, we are so appreciative of what our volunteers and members and donors have done in the past for us, and what they're indicating that they're willing to stick with us as we move through these challenging times. It is such a deep sense of gratitude. And yeah, I think that's the right word for us.
Gratitude is a good one. Kyria, how about you? What do you think in terms of themes and sort of one word that kind of captures where we are right now?
I would choose resilient. Or resiliency. I think just the nonprofit sector in general, as with many sectors, we're figuring out how to move through this and be resilient. And just like nature is resilient, it will be there. It will be there for us when this is over. It's there now, and it'll still be there.
That's a good way to say that. So we've had hopeful, full of gratitude, resilient, and we'll end with you. What's your word?
Ironically, it's connected. I'm socially distant and physically distant from many people, but I feel really connected. And I think it's that we're all going through this very hard time together, and there's a connection there. But also, I feel really connected to the people doing this work alongside me, and I would say that about everyone on this podcast.
That's great. And I think, you know, we heard a chuckle in the background. I think I would agree. And it's important that as colleagues in this industry and focusing our time on environment charities right now, which is so important, that we do stay connected and we do try to share as much as possible. I'll make mention again of just the AFP resources that are online for our members right now. Again, AFP, the Greater Toronto Chapter, has a COVID-19 resource guide for members online. And we also were trying to stay in touch and share resources over AFP Connect, and that's on the global platform. And if you're an AFP Toronto Chapter member, you can look out for more local resources and upcoming virtual events. And those will be sent directly to members shortly. So thank you all for this. This was a great conversation. Hopefully we can stay connected.
Andrea, I have to say you're probably my new favorite co-host. I'll invite you back and we'll interview. You can be my official representative for the Fundraising Talent Podcast in Canada. So anytime you want to bring a guest on here and talk about fundraising, you can co-host. Super. And I'll sit back and let you do what you did just wonderfully. Thank you, all of you, for being on the podcast with us today. Have a wonderful week. Thank you again.
Thanks, Jason.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.